Hello, welcome back to Searching Inward. This is George, joined with Seth and Scott and Anna, and we are embarking on a brand new experience, a new series of formats for new episodes for Searching Inward. And today is our first topical episode, so we're excited. We're kind of winging it a little bit here, so we're going to see how it goes. But today we want to talk to you about awareness. Awareness in the context of mental and emotional well-being is a state of conscious recognition and understanding of one's thoughts, feelings, sensations, and surroundings. Awareness is impartial, non-judgmental, and is marked by a quality of differentiation from patterns and habits. The more aware a person is, the more cognizant they are of how they show up in the world, and they have gained an ability to practice distance from thoughts and feelings. So awareness, Seth, is absolutely important to the experience of living a great life, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, that was a beautiful introduction, by the way.
Well, you wrote it, so I just read it.
Great.
No, so you thought your introduction was a great introduction.
Yeah, you knew you liked it.
We're around here at mm-hmm. Restore. So much of what is deeply valuable to us is taking an honest look at our lives, you know, an intimate look at our lives of how we've wound up where we are. Why do we do the things we do? What's led to this place that we're at in our lives? And, you know, I think you can't find change, real meaningful change and lasting change in your life or growth in your life without cultivating some capacity for awareness, self-awareness, awareness of yourself. You know, the ways that you have repeatedly shown up in the world until this point. You know, your life is built on the ways that you repeatedly, habitually show up. And sometimes those things are what we outgrow. And so then they need changed, right? And so much of what real growth looks like is being honest with how we show up in the world. And that means looking at those things. So we're talking about self-awareness today. Awareness, but specifically when we aim awareness at ourselves, because that's the start of how we grow.
You said habitually. So the opposite of awareness would be how habitually you're showing up and hurting yourself or hurting each other and are unaware of how consistent those patterns are producing a particular result in your life, right? Yeah, so
it is the awareness. Or how limiting they can be, right? Like they can keep us from getting to where we ultimately want to go because they have limits placed on how we show up in the world.
Yeah, Anna, talk a little bit about that, just how we see or understand this concept.
So I love this quote that Seth dug up by Emily Marotin, I believe. I might be saying that incorrectly, but here is the quote. And it really sums up change and our capacity to. True change occurs only when we are able to look at our thoughts and beliefs instead of through them. So, you know, we show up to the world with a set of beliefs and way of thinking, right? Those things are kind of conditioned in us from childhood, whether that's because of our family of origin, because of our personality, because of our social systems that we live in, all of those things and our life experiences, right? All of those things work together to condition just the way that we think and the things that we believe. And so until we're able to really get to a point of self-awareness, and that is even understanding that the way that we think and we believe is actually unique to us, right? Not everyone believes the same way we do. Not everyone thinks and processes information the same way that we do. And that our way actually isn't the only way of doing it. Being able to kind of rise above that and understand there is a certain paradigm of beliefs, of thoughts that I am seeing the world through. And then being able to maybe filter that and say, all right, what might be another way of looking at things or thinking about things or approaching things different to what I was conditioned to do? Only then can we really begin to change things that we might be stuck in.
Wow. So that's standing at a distance from your thoughts to witness them. I mean, I think I've heard psychologists call it like meta-awareness. You guys heard that? It's like to know what our mind's doing.
Right. Understanding why we think the thoughts we think.
Yeah. And with a lot of neuroscience and our understanding of how the brain works and how our minds work now, that you really can practice this of like witnessing your thoughts. Wow. That is completely different. Looking at your thoughts as opposed to looking through them. Mm. What a great way to kind of frame that up. Scott, I've heard you say this in some kind of way every now and then, but how you see is what you see.
Right. We see what we believe.
We see what we believe. Yeah.
We don't believe what we see. And so that's a big part of awareness. You know, the 25 years probably been now since I first read Addictions and Grace by Dr. Gerald May. And it really, that was the beginning of my self-examination, which is a way of becoming aware of why and where am I at? And I wrote down awareness. It's to me. So May says awareness is the beginning of transformation. There can be no change. There can be no transformation, he says, without awareness, which also is what Einstein said about, we can't solve the problem from the same consciousness that caused the problem. So for me, awareness is every day, where am I? Where am I today? Mm-hmm. And that's where am I emotionally, physically, spiritually? How did I get here? Where do I want to go? How do I get there? And then questions like, how's my sobriety today? From the different agents or patterns that I have that I go to when I don't want to feel it. I want to, as Brene Brown says, when I just want to check out and numb. So there's two parts to awareness for me. There's an awareness of how I got here, but there's also an awareness of where am I resisting? Why? Where is it that I don't want to be aware? Because the reality is, yeah, I want to stay in denial. I want to just keep hanging on to this dysfunctional thing because in some strange way, it's serving me. And usually the way it serves me is I don't have to feel, I don't have to deal with the reality that I'm dealing with. So it's protection.
It's protection, isn't it? Protection.
Yes. That's a great way to think of it, George. So, there are days I do not want to be aware. I don't want to put the energy. I don't want to put the effort. I just want to check out. And that's a part of the pattern for me. But I do want to say one of the ways I think that it was one of the things that Seth had on here, but self-compassion is absolutely a requirement if I am going to be self-aware, because otherwise it can be a brutal process that just, I'm going to recoil from it. I'm just like, yeah, I know. I know I don't have the energy or the strength or the stamina to do that today. But if I can always come to it with passion and gentleness, there's a way. And then the other part of the self-awareness for me is my relationship with God. What is the filter in which usually it has to do with shame that's causing me to feel even rejected and by God? And so there's an awareness there. I don't want you looking at me, God, either. I just want to be left alone. And in that aloneness and isolation, and for me, that's why groups that we do are so powerful place for that process of self-awareness. And when we hear people check in each week, just doing the feelings check-in or how we open our meetings, we give them the time to process, where are they? And that awareness is just, it may be the most important thing we do in the whole meeting, really, is giving people that space and that time. So self-awareness, it's absolutely critical for our process of growth.
And what you're saying, sometimes we can choose not to be self-aware for protection. Is would you say, like, I know it could be a hyper focus on our flaws or our strengths. So sometimes we protect ourselves and don't want to be self-aware because there's some greatness or some responsibility that we have to show up in the world in some way, right? And there's some gift we are to the world. So sometimes it could be protecting ourselves from, we don't want to fail, or this expectation that's on us because we know there's some goodness in us, or there's some way we're to contribute to the world to make it better. So sometimes we protect ourselves from that. But equally, it could be the flaws that we're protecting ourselves from, right?
Yeah, and I think that also one of the self-awarenesses for me is, am I operating out of a false self today? You know, am I, because I don't want to face the truth that I don't feel good about being me today. Mm. And I don't want to be exposed to the world and you know, feelings of rejection would come with that. So self-awareness is just, it's a necessary path. And so I also think it's why, like, I have Seth, George, and Anna in my life. I can be truthful around you guys, and you guys are gentle, compassionate, and empathetic, and so you're safe for me. And so that helps me come out of my inward dilemma of not wanting to be aware, but I can actually get closer to an awareness by processing with you guys. So for our listeners, do you have friends like that in your life? To me, they're the difference between life and death.
I feel the same way, Scott, to have you three in my life too. That does matter. Let me ask you guys this. What does impartial observation of self-awareness or non-judgmental presence with yourself, what does that mean?
This ties in so carefully to self-compassion, mm-hmm. right? Self-awareness and self-compassion have to go hand in hand, because you need to be able to look at your things kind of like objectively without saying that your strengths are amazing or that your limitations are devastating, but that you're limited, you're human, and understanding maybe a little bit more from just a logical or cerebral perspective, like where you are is not necessarily a judgment on your character or your worth or your value. It is just part of being human, and just having an accurate understanding of that without judgment, that is being compassionate, right? Because everybody has limitations. Everybody struggles. Everyone also has strengths. And so the sum of your strengths doesn't make you more superhuman. And the sum of your limitations doesn't make you less than human. We are all human. And having an understanding of that and holding the tension between that, it is critical for self-acceptance. And you have to have that in order to grow.
Anna, that I was thinking when you were just talking, how non-judgmental just took a totally different turn for me. It's like being non-judgmental is like you could have a judgment of I'm so great, you know, and this elevated perspective of yourself. And so self-awareness would be, wow, I'm maybe not as great as I think I am sometimes. Sometimes I think I'm too great. But the other side of non-judgmental is that we're not as bad as we think we are either. And it's so like this impartial observation is really bringing those two things together in a more healthy way that's livable, right? And sustainable in our lives. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to bring, like, at least for me, I remember thinking in the past how self-aware I am because how much I'm thinking, I'm aware I'm thinking thoughts about myself. And they, you know, I would just call this rumination, you know, and it was usually either negative thoughts, which is probably most of the time. I confused that for like being hyper self-aware, but it was still through a lens that I was viewing myself. And we're talking about impartiality, which is actually a step farther back to be able to view without any positive or negative regard. Is awareness. And so practicing self-awareness is not either one. It's not negative or positive, actually. It's being able to have like you mentioned in that opening, some differentiated perspective to be able to view. It's more of an observation is the word I like to think of. And I think of that that quote from, what's his name? Right there, Carl Rogers, who says, the curious paradox is that when I can accept myself just as I am, then I can change.
Wow.
You know, which is a acceptance of, right, this is how I am, and I have to start there. That's where I think change begins.
And that's, it takes a lot of practice to be able to be with yourself in that way, doesn't it? Like it just does not come natural.
It takes a lot of grace.
What?
Right? Because it takes a lot of grace, because when we look inward, I think we're just naturally wired to either elevate our flaws or elevate our strengths and either, you know, hyperinflate our ego or just totally like beat ourselves down. And neither of those are helpful to us in growth and in self-acceptance.
So there is this aspect of awareness of ourselves within ourselves, but then it's also it's greater self-understanding for deeper connection to have more healthy relationships too. Like, of course, it starts with having a more healthy relationship with ourselves. But and like, I can't remember the author that wrote emotional intelligence, psychologist that wrote that. But awareness is both of yourself and others. And there is what, like a narrow circle of awareness that starts with us, but then it expands to include all the meaningful relationships in our life. And so like understanding ourselves gives us, and Scott, you were mentioning this earlier, to kind of know where I'm at in this moment, in this day, in some ways is like guardrails. So I don't, you know, go off the road and cause a great wreck and, you know, with other cars on the road too. So even knowing where we're at, maybe in some ways helps us respond to others around us in a more appropriate way where we're not acting, you know, out of our worst self. Right.
Yeah. And just a personal reflection of transparency for me, for listeners, is one of the biggest areas of awareness that I have found in this recent last couple of years is just how much I struggle personally with looking at myself from a place of shame, doubt, and fear. And that those three parts of my being are the most powerful influencers of why I choose this, to see everything the way I do and why I respond the way I do. And so I have an awareness that every day I get triggered. Is that shame speaking? Is that my fear speaking? Is that my doubt and insecurity speaking? And then I'm aware then I want to empty that out. I want that to be transformed. So God and I daily are working on growing me into a man of faith, hope, and love. And that's so awareness of what needs to change, what needs to be emptied out, which is kenosis, and then also awareness of what the theosis and the divine coming in. And what a difference it is when I live a day from hope, you know, faith and love versus responding. And I catch myself here recently. That's fear speaking. That's shame speaking. And if I'm not aware of that, I'm just going to keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting it's just insanity. And so I'm telling you, awareness is... it's interesting. That's 25 some years since I read May's book on it. And that's the first thing that stood out for me. Gosh, awareness. I was not aware at the time.
Maybe that's a gift we can give our listeners, is a time where you're unaware. I'll give you the gift of going first, because one just occurred to me when you were talking. When my kids were in middle school, we had a bunch of boys that I knew were coming to toilet paper our house. And so, obviously, I'm a pastor, and I was reading my Bible, preparing for my sermon on Sunday, and I was sitting in the window just waiting for, I knew these kids were coming. And then I heard a bunch of noise outside, and I jumped up with my Bible in my hand and started chasing about six or seven middle school boys up the road. And as I'm running up the road, I become aware of, like, what am I doing? I am this grown man chasing these middle school boys with a Bible. And so I'm running, and I start slowing down because awareness kicks in. And like, what am I going to do if I catch them? Like, am I going to hit them with my Bible? It's like, and, but it's amazing how, you know, obviously I wish I would have caught that before I jumped up, but it is kind of an example of a practice of sometimes it takes a little bit of time for awareness to kick in. So that's my gift, you guys. That was one that came to mind.
I love it. It's so cliche. The pastor beating someone with his Bible.
What would I have done if I would have caught him? I have no idea.
Not just metaphorically, but literally.
True definition of a Bible thumper.
Hey, the mom came back. The mom came, and she's like, "What are you doing chasing my boys?" And she had she had like a big SUV, and it was loaded with toilet paper. I'm like, "What are you doing taking these kids out with an arsenal of toilet paper?" But anyhow, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've got a kind of a story. You know, this really plays into, Scott alluded to this earlier, like how difficult it can be to become aware.
Mm-hmm.
What it actually means for us, because it means we have to be honest with ourselves. I think we can't change what we don't first see and tell the truth about. So it's a scary thing, I think, sometimes embracing the truth about myself that I've maybe been trying to hold at bay, because it means I'm going to get vulnerable about some behavior that I wish wasn't true of me.
Mm.
So there's been many times in the past. So this is kind of like a conglomeration of a couple moments with my wife, where she's talking about some relational conflict she has with someone. And me as a peacekeeper sometimes, what I still have this tendency to do is what I'm hearing is this kind of communication of demonizing the other person, which my wife doesn't do. Is she's not doing that, but I'm hearing that. And so I have this tendency to try and bring out, you know, compassion towards the other person that my wife's in conflict with. So, you know, they're probably having a hard day, and, you know, maybe like, and it moves into like me trying to find the goodness in this other person. And then my wife is like, well, are you on their side? What's happening right now? Like, why are you defending them? And then I would get, you know, I'm not doing that. What do you mean? I'm just trying to help you see that, you know. And it was a thing for a while where my wife did not feel heard at all when she was trying to express how difficult this relational conflict was for her. And it's very similar too, where it feels like tension between two people, and I want to try and reconcile it too early before I actually listened to the whole thing. And so trying to balance it, I'm trying to balance out what feels tension ridden. And for me, I had to be honest with myself that I feel tension about the fact that it sounds like someone's being talked about poorly, but that's okay. And I'm not going to reconcile this too quickly without actually allowing my wife to feel heard first. So I just had to listen and, like, you know, nod my head and say, yeah, that sucks. How could that person do that or say that? And just hold my tongue. And then my wife started to feel heard, you know?
Wow, that's wonderful. Love that. And so it was the awareness of hearing not only your initial thought, but how your wife was experiencing it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that expanded for you in that moment. The awareness expanded. Yeah, because she matters too. And her experience matters just as much. All right, Scott, Anna, you guys have one?
I'll go next. I feel like I am constantly expanding my awareness of self, and how in years past with just a lack of awareness as to specifically how I was thinking, how I was believing things, and how I was showing up in the world, as, you know, as a result of like looking through my lens and paradigm instead of really understanding why I had that lens and paradigm, specifically when it comes to like parenting. So, you know, I've got 3 kids, and the oldest two are pretty much adults. They're 20 and 19, and then I've got a 14-year-old, and it's been really interesting to see the difference between my parenting of the oldest two, who were just, you know, right on top of each other. And I was firmly showing up to the world through a very narrow lens and paradigm, and my parenting reflected that. And now the way that I parent the younger one is quite a bit different, because I'm understanding why I've thought the things that I thought and behaved the way that I behaved. And so now I'm learning to kind of expand a little bit more beyond like, hey, there is more to a person than their behavior. And behavior is just symptomatic of what's happening, you know, within a person. And I'm just like, I'm really sad to say that, you know, a lot of damage was done with my older two, and that I just felt tremendous amount of pressure from my family of origin and from my faith tradition to have morally perfect children. And I remember when the oldest two, this was before the youngest was even born, when the oldest two would argue, I would say, be kind or be quiet. And I cringe at that thought. Not that kindness is wrong. I always want my people to be kind. But I can see now that what I was concerned with was the behavior that they were exhibiting. And what I really should have been tuning into was, hey, what is it that's driving this behavior right now? What is it that you need to communicate? What are your feelings? What's happening in your inner world? But I did not have the emotional maturity or understanding to be able to do that for them yet. And the byproduct was I taught them to like repress like their feelings, their thoughts, to not be able to fully show up in the world, because what I taught them, and this was errant teaching, but that, you know, the way you show up is way more important than what's happening inside of you. And I am, very regretful about that. I'm trying desperately to course correct and to apologize for the ways that I fell short, but it's hard. Like that's a big pill to swallow when you know that your lack of awareness and understanding has negatively impacted other people. It's kind of ouchy.
Well, thank you for that authenticity and openness. Yeah, that's, and so self-awareness right now for you is how in some way can I make amends for it? And it's partly on them to be open to that and to receive it too. But yeah, like it's a beautiful place, but a difficult place to be. Thanks for sharing that, Anna. Scott, do you have anything you want to add to this from your own personal experience?
Just that it doesn't matter how old you are, that we should constantly be, I believe, in an inner journey of searching inward, as I said, to become aware of why am I doing the things I'm doing. What I think it's a great reflection question on self-awareness is, you know, as I think it was Claudia Townsend said that no one is to blame, but all are responsible. So if a lot of times people get to this stage of life, my age, and they want to blame everybody and look back and they become bitter. And, you know, this instead of taking responsibility for, and so, you know, I'm in a space that I don't want to be in, yet I'm responsible. So awareness for me is, how did I get here? What's been my part in this? And what needs to change in me so I can grow and go forward? And so I think a beautiful part of awareness is, as I'm experiencing, is that instead of condemning myself or other people and being either a victim or blaming, either way, I can look inward and say, okay, this is what needs to grow and change in me so that I don't repeat that. And it's never too late to do that. And so this truly is the best version of me there ever has been right now. And I attribute all of it to the journey of self-awareness, because it just, and staying in this process. And that's the other thing. I really, as I said earlier, you can't do this alone. You need others to go with you on this journey, because they become the divine mirror that reflect back to me what I cannot see in isolation. And so, and that's one of the things I think I would ask our listeners, are you aware of how you isolate, how you pull away, how you resist this? And I guarantee you that's fear is the number one reason most people pull away from it. So find, as Brené Brown says, wherever you can find those groups, wherever you can find that space where you can be known and you're going to have that fully experience of being known. She goes, sprint to it, run to it, find them. Well, restore small groups. It's a big plug for us. So, but it really is life-giving and life-changing when you can find that space.
Scott, that line you said, I just, how helpful that is to each of us individually and how helpful it is to every relationship that matters to us, how helpful it would be to a better world, a more beautiful world that we all hope for, that no one is to blame. Everyone is responsible. I can't think of a better way to sum up self-awareness. Like if we could do that, wow, we would all be in a better place. Well, let's do this. We want to end these topical episodes with a couple takeaways. So we got two that we'd love you listeners to take away. The first one is a question. And Seth, if you could help us maybe flesh this out a little bit. We're to ask, how self-aware am I?
Yeah, I think this is the beginning of looking at doing some of the harder work of being honest with ourselves. Maybe I'm not very self-aware, you know? And some of this is about, you know, just taking a look at our thought life and our emotional life and how repetitive is it? You know, how are we habitually emotionally and thinking and even behaviorally showing up in the world? Because our patterns are where we're going to be, you know, getting most caught and stuck in. But the thing is once you can locate and name and see a pattern, then you can work with it. Mm. You can do something about it. So how self-aware am I? And I think one way to kind of frame this up is by looking at kind of signs of low self-awareness and maybe some signs of stronger self-awareness. So I'll just name a couple in both of these categories, and then definitely feel free, y'all, to chime in with some other things come to mind. But just some signs of low self-awareness that I had written down were high mental emotional reactivity. Hmm. You know, I'm getting dysregulated easily, or I have my ability to manage stress is quite low, or something you said really triggers me. You know, I've said before that anytime there's intensity, frequency, and duration of any emotional experience, you know, there's something there that we should look at. So any emotional reactivity or just triggering, whether that's with certain kinds of people, certain characteristics or traits, or a person in your life, usually that speaks to something that we can look at, you know, about ourselves. The next thing I wrote down was an inability to see your patterns and habits. So, I mean, we are wired. Our brain is wired for energy conservation. And so there's an efficiency to showing up in a patterned way. It's just how we're wired. And so if you take a long enough time to look, you will see habits and patterns. So the point is if you don't notice any of that, there's probably a lack of self-awareness.
Yeah, I would just like chime in. Like, when's the last time you thought a new thought about yourself or about the relationships in your life? Do you continually think the same way? Good. When's the last time you thought about something from a different angle? Mm.
Totally. And I think that plays really well into the last one I wrote, was just repeated relational conflicts. So, like, do I keep showing up with this person in the same way, expecting different results? That is a good sign of low self-awareness, because I'm not using new material. I'm still showing up with a limited way that with a limited sense of self that I have, what I'm capable of, who I think you are, who I think I am. So if I keep showing up with the same thing, there will be repeated relational conflicts when this situation, this conflict is calling for, it's asking for both of us to relate in a different way. What else comes to mind for you guys about signs of low self-awareness? Anything?
I think that covers it really well, actually.
Cool. Well, then moving into signs of strong self-awareness, I wrote increased understanding of the motivation behind our behaviors. You know, I think a lot of the reason we continue to repeat behaviors is because we don't know where they came from. We don't realize that they were inherited, they were passed down to us, that we are acting in ways that we were told by our parents or peers of who we are. And we don't have to keep acting in those same ways. So I think increased understanding of what is motivating our behaviors is definitely a strong sign of self-awareness. The next one I wrote was non-judgmental observation of our patterns and habits. Again, it gets confused all the time that rumination of thoughts around how, you know, how negatively we think about ourselves is strong self-awareness, when it is not. Because you're stuck in a limited way of thinking about yourself. That's not awareness. That's seeing through a filter.
Yeah, that's continuing the cycle.
Yeah.
Right, not thinking new thoughts.
Exactly. Yeah, and I can't respond to you any differently. The next one was self-compassion. If I have an ability to say, oh, I did it again, but you know what? That's a learned thing that I took on a long time ago to feel safe and protected. Okay, I'm going to take a deep breath and recognize that was valuable for me. And it makes sense that I'm still trying to use it because it's what feels familiar and comfortable and safe. But you know what? I need some new options now in order to relate to myself and to you differently and not repeat the similar conflict. So self-compassion. I am accepting myself as the way that I needed to keep showing up this way previously. But it's time to do some new stuff. And that means I need to be compassionate for making sense of, you know, why I'm still doing that on some level because it's what feels safe. And then the last one was just increased emotional regulation. And for me, yeah, the more this word keeps coming up, the more I practice impartiality or observation of emotion, the more I kind of, less it has me and more I have it. And so there is an ability to not be completely swallowed by my emotion and, you know, be angry still 3 days later. I have an ability to regulate more quickly, more easily, more often when something pulls me, when something triggers me. Because it's not that I will stop being, you know, dysregulated or stop getting frustrated or angry, upset about things. But I will more, with self-awareness, I'll be able to realize I was triggered because of this. You stepped on an old wound or there's an unmet need here. But I can regulate because I recognize what that's about.
I think even just like a simple understanding when we are dysregulated, what being dysregulated feels like. Mm. I think so many people are just blissfully unaware of the fact that they have been triggered by something and are responding in an emotional way or a dysfunctional way because they have no idea they've been triggered. They have no idea their whole nervous system is dysregulated. And so yeah. I think just even taking the time to educate yourself physiologically, what is that doing to me when I am dysregulated? When I notice that my heart rate is elevated and that my breath is shallow and that, yes, like my blood is pounding in my ears. Like those are all indicators that you are emotionally dysregulated.
I'm with you. I think that's huge. Even to have the comparison and contrasting of this is the felt sense of being dysregulated. This is the felt sense of being regulated. So that I know where I'm at and how to return to the one I want to be in. Yeah.
Well done, you guys. Thank you. The question asking how self-aware am I? Thank you guys for those signs of low self-awareness and strong self-awareness. But Scott, I'm going to give you the final word because you're the senior among us. The best looking.
The Carl Jung quote, he who looks outward dreams, but he who looks inward awakens. The enlightenment that we will begin to see things that we never were willing to see before. And that's the beginning of freedom and transformation is and that's the path of self-awareness. It's the path. Stay on it.
Well, thank you friends for joining us. Our first topical episode on awareness. And we hope that you're going to leave today with an awakening that a growing awareness of how you could live more joyfully, love yourself more deeply with honesty, and then just to have more healthy relationships around you. And that's what Restore is all about. It's about helping you discover that and experience that. So if we could help you, join us, visit us online at restoresmallgroups.org. That's a great place just to check out some of the other resources we have and groups that you can join. But have a good one and make this day the best it can be by living more awake and more aware. Take care, friends.
Hey, it's Anna. Thanks so much for tuning into the Searching Inward podcast. If you've enjoyed listening or have benefited in any way from the podcast, we would love for you to come alongside and join us in the mission to bring hope and healing to the world. By considering becoming a monthly giver of even $5, you're making a huge impact on the ways we're able to serve. Please consider giving by going to www.restoresmallgroups.org/donate. Thank you.